Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. In this episode, I chat to Clive Johnson Cooper, winner of this year's Gardener's World Garden of the Year, about his jungle-themed urban garden in Stockbridge, Edinburgh. Clive has created a garden from scratch, and the results of his passion in his tiny courtyard space won him the judge's choice vote. Listening to Clive talk about the creation of his garden and his bold planting choices is nothing short of inspiring, as he aims to secure this year's People's Choice vote too. Clive, I'm delighted to welcome you to the Scotland Grow Show and to chat to you about your award-winning garden.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be invited along.
So let's just dig straight into your urban garden in Edinburgh, and maybe we could start by you telling our listeners a little bit about what the garden was like when you started and what you had to do to make it the absolutely gorgeously lush space that it is today.
Well, when I moved in, which was back in 2005, there actually wasn't a garden at all there. It was a small muse house in the centre of Edinburgh. And at the back of the house was actually a very old, run-down, lean-to in effect, almost like a big shed. It had actually been put there illegally, and I was in two minds what to do. So initially I thought, well, there's not enough space for a garden. So I thought, well, actually, I'll probably end up just building another extension, but something obviously a lot nicer. But I made the right decision. I lived in the house for 4, 5, 6 months. And then I decided over time, well, actually, I can rejig the house, have enough space. And I think there'll be enough space outside just to have a garden. It's probably about as small as you could get for a garden.
We should probably say, Clive, at this point that your garden is 3 metres by 3 metres, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely tiny. It's very small. I mean, unbelievably small. But I had the vision there and I thought, no, I'm sure I can do this and I'm sure there's enough space. So I drew up some plans. Initially, it was to knock the extension down and then to get my builder to build some walls around the garden and to put the Yorkstone cobbles in. From that, I wasn't quite clear initially what style of garden I was going to do. So again, I thought, well, I'll just put the main focus of the garden in. So I put a lovely lion's head fountain, which you can just about see at the end of the garden. And there's a reason I've made it so it's subtle. And also there's a lovely, it's a blue granite table that actually matches and tones in with the water feature I've got there. It's Madagascan. So I put those things in place. And at the time, like a lot of gardeners, I love colour. So a large part of the planting that I initially put in was probably smaller perennials, more sort of cottage style. And it was a lovely garden. It was, you know, I really liked it and enjoyed it. But I think I sort of fell into the mistake that a lot of gardeners make, which is because it was a small space, I sort of put smaller pots and smaller plants within that space, which while it looked very nice, I think it sort of emphasized that it was a small space. The other thing I had to take in consideration was when my builder, like all good builders, went and did the job, he knocked down the extension. And what he didn't tell me was that he hadn't taken all of the subfloor up. So when he put the cobbles down and created some small planting areas around the edge, there was only about, if I was lucky, a foot of soil there. And there wasn't even any drainage holes. Now, obviously, unless you're going to create a bog garden in Scotland, it was not ideal at all. So the only way round that, other than taking the whole of the patio back up again, was that he drilled just some small holes through the concrete subfloor. So I'm actually left with very small borders around the edge, with probably only about a foot or so of compost, believe it or not. The other thing I had to do as a result of that, you can't see it in the pictures in the Gardener's World magazine, but there are some very large pots in the garden. But I've purposely hidden those pots with some of the planting that I've done. So it's a combination of plants planted in the ground and also within some of these large pots that are sort of disguised with more planting. So sort of a layering there of the plants. So that was sort of my initial challenge of getting the garden set up. I would say over time, what I grew to realize from my experience was that, and also from other gardeners, was that although I love color, I started to see more and more jungle gardens, primarily down south. And I thought, well, actually, I need more structure within the garden. And I wanted to create a sense of a larger space. So I gradually started to change, probably only 3-4 years ago, from a sort of cottage style garden into more of a jungle style garden. Now that's a bit of a probably a strange thing to do within Scotland, because first of all, you think, well, hang on a minute, why would you want to do a jungle garden in Scotland with the weather and all the conditions? And secondly, with the space that I had, you think again, well, you know, if you're going to put jungle plants in with big leaves, and you probably need a bigger garden for that. But I think hopefully within the pictures, although I think people can see it's a small space, I don't think they quite realise how small. There was somebody who said to me, well, it's a table within like a little forest. Yeah, you're right. It is a table within a little forest. It's supposed to be a relaxing area with lots of planting that envelop you. So when you're sitting in that area, you can't see the walls of the garden, and you get that feeling that you are actually in quite a relaxing sort of a clearing within a little Amazon rainforest. But yeah, it's a tiny space, and it would sort of go against the grain, sort of putting some of the large plants that I have within the garden. There's a few tricks that I use to try and create that garden. First of all, is to use a lot of the vertical space within the garden. So I put in the tree ferns. Again, as long as you get tree ferns that are tall enough, the leaves will be above you rather than, you know, you're walking into them and actually eating into the space in the garden. So, you know, they're pushed to the corners of the garden. They go up above, over the edges of the wall, and then come in slightly over the patio space. I've also used some other big plants, the Schefflera, which again can get quite a large plant. But the trick I've used there is I planted it, and then as it started to grow, I've got straining wires on the wall, and I actually pull it into the wall as almost as though it's a creeper. So it would instinctively grow out into the space, and within no time at all, I wouldn't be able to have my table and chairs there. It would eat up the whole space. So by planting it, gradually tying it in every time it grows and pulling it closer to the wall, it's actually allowed me to have a plant that you wouldn't really be able to grow in that space. I have got a bit of a dilemma with that plant, is whether I continue to let that grow and let it get taller and taller, a bit like the tree ferns, it's sort of growing above and over you, or whether I cut it back hard and then let it regrow again. But that's for the future. But for now, anyway, it's growing ideally, and it fits well within the space.
And I think listeners will be intrigued that you have tree ferns in your garden. So how do they fare during winter in your microclimate now?
Yeah, it's because I live in Edinburgh. It's actually, for those of you who know Edinburgh, it's down in the Stockbridge area. So it's sort of down in a dip, sheltered away, and it's south facing the garden, and I've got reasonably high walls. And further back from my garden walls is actually some large new town townhouses. So again, they provide some shelter. But I've actually found with the tree ferns, certainly in the area where I'm living and within my garden, I actually probably take quite a few risks every year. And I'm probably a bit guilty of doing what you shouldn't do, which is waiting, checking for the weather, then seeing some really cold weather's coming along and quickly running out and wrapping them up. The only thing I would say I do sort of round about this time of year is, quite religiously, is as the leaves fall off some of the trees nearby, I pick those up and I always start packing the centre of the trees with those. And I only tend to wrap them with fleece if I know there's sort of very, very cold weather coming. And they've been there and they've been down to minus 15 and they've had no problems whatsoever. And even without fleece, I've had them down to probably minus 5, which I wouldn't necessarily advise, but they are actually a bit harder than what people think. It's the crowns you've got to protect. So as long as you keep the top part and the crowns protected, they're normally fine.
And that's great to hear that they're thriving in your location in Scotland, because they probably are something that a lot of people shy away from, thinking it's just too much work.
I think they're one of the best plants you can have. They're very elegant. They just look great in any garden. I mean, obviously some styles of gardens you would put them in, it's like a cottage garden. But for a lot of gardens, if you want a bit of structure and you want a focal point, you can't beat a tree fern, in my opinion. And you know, once they've got established, they're generally fine, just with a little bit of protection. They don't take a lot of work. So yeah, I've had no problems with them at all, and I would definitely recommend them.
So you went for this jungle theme in your garden, you went for bold planting, large leaf foliage, kind of very, very small colour palette, really a green colour palette.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I did as well was obviously putting lots of creepers over the walls. So again, to try and push the walls outwards, because again, if you've got a small space, if you can see the walls, you can trick the eye into thinking the space is bigger by covering the walls in greenery, which I've done with clematis. I do love colour. Now, a lot of people looking at my garden, they might think that I just love greenery. Well, I don't, but for the style of garden I was trying to create, I actually had to sort of hold myself back a lot, because it would have been very easy for me to go from what I had as a cottage garden, which was very, very colourful, to go into the green spectrum. It was quite tricky in a way. It's a certain mindset that I think a lot of people can't always do. So I had to edit the planting a lot to make sure that I had flowers within the garden, but I didn't necessarily let the flowers dominate. But the flowers that I do have, they tend to be sort of subtle bursts within the garden. So there might be some clematis that will come out on the walls. I've got the Salvia amistad, which again is a lovely plant, but quite subtle in amongst the green foliage.
And my favourite, my eye was drawn to that right away, one of my favourites.
Yeah, I love it. It's a fantastic plant. Also astranthias, I've got a few of those, and they're again, you know, they're quite subtle. They don't actually jump out immediately at you, but if you're sitting in the garden, you sort of spot these pops of colour that come out every now and again. And also fragrance is quite important in the garden, because again, sort of getting that tropical rainforest feel. So I've actually thought about fragrance in the garden. So I've got things like star jasmine and a few other little plants like that, that on a warm summer's evening, you can almost think you're not in Edinburgh, almost. It's a little bit of imagination sometimes, but you can do it, particularly when the fountain's going as well.
So all of this planting in your garden has led to the creation of a beautifully and wonderfully successful garden. But one of the biggest successes for you, as we said at the top of the episode, is this year you had the honour of winning the Gardener's World Garden of the Year competition. So let's dive in and talk a wee bit about that. So what prompted you to enter your garden?
That's a very good question. I actually put it off for a few years. What happened was, is one of my neighbours further down the lane where I live, she saw my garden and she said, you should actually enter it into the competition. And we've probably all been there, particularly when you were kids or whatever. You'd enter a competition, you'd never hear anything back, and you think, oh, well, that was a waste of time. And you just don't bother in the end. And I was sort of almost at that point where I thought, oh, you know, I love gardening. I know I've got, you know, fairly nice space, but I thought I'll just enter again and it'll just get put in the drawer of, you know, nice garden, but forget about it. So my neighbour first planted the seed. Then the other seed that got planted in my mind was, I actually volunteer at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh for Kirsty Wilson, who's the Beach Group presenter. She actually saw my garden, and again, she was very impressed with it. And she was quite taken aback by how well I'd actually worked with what was a foliage garden. Because again, it's not the easiest of planting schemes. You know, you can add a lot of colour into a garden and get sort of a wow factor. But trying to plant with foliage, it can be quite tricky in the way that you plant it up. But anyway, she was very, very keen about the garden. So I sort of put it off a bit further. And then I got to, it was February of this year, and it was one of those wet, cold, damp, dreary, dreich, miserable Scottish mornings. And I was sitting having a cup of coffee and I thought, I've got half an hour. It's a miserable day. What can I do? And then it suddenly came into my mind about the competition. So I had a quick look online and I was well in advance of the deadline. So I thought, well, I'm probably going to waste half an hour of my life, but I might as well get out of my system, upload a few pictures, put in a bit of detail about my garden, and then probably never hear anything again. So yes, yeah, so that's what happens. It was quite a long, drawn out process. But we got to, that was in sort of February time, we got to June, and I knew the cutoff date was sort of end of May, early June. And I'd more or less forgotten about the competition. And I was sitting in the Botanic Gardens one afternoon, and I suddenly got this phone call, and a lady said, oh, it's such and such from Gardeners World. And I sort of misheard them at first. And I thought, I thought it was like a random cold call, and I almost cut them off. But then fortunately I asked them again, and they said, no, it's actually somebody from Gardeners World, and you're in the final. And I thought, it sort of took me aback because I wasn't really expecting it. So so it was a bit of a surprise and a bit of a shock. So they said that there was eight of us at that point in the very final, and that they were going to go round all eight gardens within the UK, interview us all, and do a photo shoot. So that happened round about July. And they then kept us waiting and waiting and waiting. And they wouldn't actually tell us who the actual overall winner was, i.e. the judge's choice, until more or less the magazine was going out, the November magazine. So I didn't really find out until probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. So it's been quite an eventful 6 months.
And how did you feel then?
Well, I think there was two moments where it didn't quite sink in. First of all, was when I got that original phone call where they said you're in the final. And I thought, really? And then, obviously, I knew I had a bit of a chance then because there was only eight of us left. Because, I mean, there was over 1,000 entries, and that's right across the UK. And I thought, I know what's going to happen now. I'll be so close, but I'll end up, they're telling me I'm like third, or which, you know, would have been great achievement. I would have been happy with that, but it's just annoying, you know, when you get so close and then you miss out. So, but anyway, that initial time they called me was amazing, and it took a while to sink in. And then I think when they actually rang me to say, well, you've won, and you've won the judge's choice, which is the one I really wanted to win, it was just an amazing moment. You know, to have people like Alan Titchmarsh, Anne-Marie Powell, Arit Anderson, all on the judging panel, and all for them to say that they love the garden, well, you know, it's... it doesn't get much better than that. Well, a gold at Chelsea would be good, but that's not... I could only but dream of that, but anyway.
No, if you've got, well, we'll come back. If you've got aspirations, we'll come back, because I think, Clive, that we want to tell listeners that you have won the Judge's Choice Garden, but the People's Choice vote is open until the 13th of November. So if you're listening to this episode before the 13th of November 2023, please now, after the episode, go onto the Gardeners World website and vote for Clive's garden so that he can scoop the double and actually bring the People's Choice vote back to Scotland as well.
Yeah, that would be amazing, particularly bringing it back to Scotland again. I mean, there was a winner a few years ago, Lizzie Schofield, and no, it's a great honour bringing it back to Scotland again.
Lizzie and Malcolm's garden won in 2020, so... within 3 years for the title to come back to Scotland. As you say, from 1,000 gardens entered all over the UK, it would just be great, wouldn't it be a great accolade? And also, I think what would be fabulous about that, I mean, you've already won, you've won the judge's choice, but to win it with a garden that's 3 meters by 3 meters, which had huge challenges to start with, a very poor of soil to plant and everything that you've told us, and to go in and create something as you have that's so special. Wow, that just shows you that you can garden anywhere.
Absolutely. I suppose that was one of the doubts in my mind. First of all, when I created the garden, again, you know, it was about the space. But also when I entered the competition, I thought I'm going to be up against people that, you know, they're going to be able to create some wonderful hard landscaping with some wonderful planting, great big ponds. And, you know, how am I going to compete with that? To be fair on the competition and the judges, I think they do look across the whole breadth of different types of gardens. So it's not, you know, they're not going for the same obvious choices every year. And I think what they liked about my garden was, yes, it was a small garden, but it was also some of the challenges that I got over in terms of, you know, again, planting primarily with foliage, trying to structure the garden in such a way that the different types of foliage looked interesting and gave impact. The way that I designed a garden that you could that looked great not only from downstairs from my bedroom, but I've got a balcony that overlooks it from my kitchen. So it was very important to me that I got, you know, both views looking amazing. And also the other thing that they pointed out was the quality of the plants and how healthy every single plant was. Because I do know they've had some gardens where it can happen to everyone, it happens to me as well, where your garden looks great 1 minute and the next minute we all have those moments where it's sort of, you know, one or two plants suddenly don't look quite as healthy. I had that challenge actually. In fact, when they were due to come out, it's just typical. We arranged the date and I thought, well, I want to get this over and done with because the foliage in the garden's looking good, great at the moment. And just before they were due to arrive, we had 3 days, and this is the end of June, of 60, 70 mile an hour winds. And I mean, 3 days constant. It was unusual. And I had this image of all the tree fern fronds snapping, going brown. And I was out there actually with, I even had to put tells along the coping stones to try and stop the tree ferns rubbing on the wall so they wouldn't snap. But you do anything to, you know, to keep your garden looking good and to win the competition. And it obviously worked. So.
Well, when you knew the judges were coming.
Well, what they did was the way that they do it is they actually send the Gardeners World magazine team out. So they send there's a photographer who gets involved with Gardeners World, and he does a lot of the photography for the RHS and Gardeners World magazine. And they send a representative from the magazine. So they come out to you initially. And then they put a presentation together for all the judges. They have a judging day down in London where they all get together. And then from that, they then decide who the winner is going to be. So, yeah, so it was more the Gardeners World team. The judges actually meet down in London and get a presentation of each garden.
I mean, Clive, you've got the title. You're a Gardener World Garden of the Year 2023 winner. So if you were to give advice now to new gardeners or people just about to get started in gardening, what advice would you give?
I would say, I mean, first of all, I think a lot of people are afraid to do things and make mistakes. If you don't try things, you know, you're not going to learn from your mistakes. And to be honest, plants are sometimes more resilient than what you think. People are afraid to cut plants, prune them, split, divide. And you can be quite brutal with plants. And they'll, as long as you give them some time to care after, they'll respond again. Same with the other thing I would suggest is if you're creating a new garden, particularly if it's a small space, I think the tendency is to go for small plants, small pots. It can sometimes actually be harder looking after plants in very small pots. So if you think, well, I'll just get a few tiny pots and I'll put them in my garden, they'll dry out quickly and the plants will probably die because the roots, you know, won't have enough space, they won't get enough water, they won't get enough nutrients. If you have bigger pots, they won't dry out as often, you won't have to water them as much, and the plants will be a lot happier. But I think there's this tendency to, I'll just go with tiny little pots and I'll start with that and it'll be, you know, I'll see how I go with that. And it's actually harder. And then I think some people give up then because the little pots, the little plants don't look very good.
Yeah, so don't play it safe. Be like Clive, be bold.
Yeah, and you'll learn, even if you make a mistake, you know, Monty Don, Alan Titchmarsh, whoever, they all make mistakes. And it doesn't matter how good a gardener you are, you will have mistakes. And there'll be years where it doesn't matter how good a gardener you are, things won't always work out the way you expect.
So to finish, Clive, then, and I can't wait to hear what you pick. So we ask all guests on the podcast the same question. If you could only have three plants in your garden, and they don't have to be your favourite plants, but if you had to start all over again and you could only have three plants in your garden, what would you choose and why? And I wonder, will you just choose jungly plants or will you?
My actual favourite style of garden, believe it or not, is actually a wild garden, as in, you know, wildflowers, prairie style planting with a big wildlife pond. And unfortunately, I don't have the garden for that. So, but I think it's certainly in terms of style of garden, I would choose that. If you're asking about, I suppose, some of my favourite plants, some of my favourite plants, I say, is I love cirsus trees. Now, an extension of my garden, I actually do all the planting for the whole of the lane where I live. So not just my garden, but every single garden, their front garden, I do every single one on the lane. And one of the trees I have planted in recent years is a cirsus tree, and it's a very special tree. It's got, you don't see a lot of them in Scotland, but the actual flowers grow out from the bark of the tree, or appear to grow out from the bark of the tree. And it just is smothered in these sort of very intense pink flowers. Then the leaves grow and it's got a lovely heart-shaped leaf. And then in autumn, you get a lovely leaf colour. Other plants we mentioned earlier on, the Salvia amistad. I saw you posted that the other day and it is on one of my favourite lists. It flowers and flowers and flowers. And it, even today when I return home from being away, in my garden, the one thing that's popping at the moment is this purpley blue amistad. And it'll probably go on into December. Another plant that I like, again, I quite like the star jasmine, partly because I love the fact that it's an evergreen climber and the fragrance of it on a hot summer's evening, you can't beat it. So, yeah, they're probably three of my favourite plants. But to be honest, I could give you a list, like most gardeners, probably about, if you asked me of a list of 50, I could probably fill it quite easily.
Yeah, and it's a horrible question to have to.
I know it is.
Down to three.
I'll think tomorrow. I'll think, oh, why did I say those three? There'll be a completely different three tomorrow if you ask me.
And the street in which you live, which you alluded to, has regularly been voted, hasn't it? The prettiest street in Edinburgh, and it's quite an Instagrammable destination these days.
Mm-hmm. It's it was actually voted at one point the prettiest street in the UK. And there was one article, which, to be honest, I think is probably pushing it a bit, but it was the seventh prettiest street in the whole of the world. But I think that one was pushing it a little bit. But I do, since probably the last 10, 11 years, I've been doing all the garden along the lane here. And basically we've put lots of streetscaping in. So we've got lichens, benches, lovely urns, we've put trees in, and loads of flowering plants. So it's a different sort of style to my garden, but it's an extension of my garden for me, and gives me a lot of joy doing that. But it's actually attracted now as a tourist destination within Edinburgh, to my neighbour's dismay.
That comes with its challenges too.
It does, actually. One of my neighbours, they found some tourists the other day sitting in their back garden around their garden table. They got a bit of a shock because the gardens are quite hidden away. But yeah, the tourists look quite at home sitting around the table having the sandwiches. So.
As you do.
Yeah.
Well, listeners who are also readers of Scotland Grows magazine might get a glimpse of both your garden and your street, because we're going to feature it in the next issue of Brilliant. Scotland Grows magazine, which comes out on the 1st of December. And we may or may not by then know the result of the People's Choice vote. I think we will. And if it will be great to be able to hopefully crown you People's Choice winner as well, Clive, for your gorgeous garden.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely keep you up to date with when I hear back. Yeah, fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, nerve-wracking wait for you.
Yeah. To be honest, even if I don't win it, I'm still very happy because I got the judge's choice, which is the main title anyway. So, but it would be nice to get the people's vote as well.
Absolutely. And once again, anyone who's listening before the 13th of November, if you can go on and vote for Clive's garden, it's the only Scottish garden that's there and available to vote for. And let's bring both titles back to Scotland this year again.
Brilliant. And if you want to vote, just go onto the Gardeners World website, and there's a link there for you to vote for my garden.
Thank you so much, Clive, for spending a little bit of time today with me and telling me so much more about your garden than we will be able to fit in the magazine. But it's lovely always to hear a garden owner talk about their garden because you're so enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I am. I am very enthusiastic about gardening. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting about it with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Clive, and hopefully we'll chat again sometime soon. Best of luck with the next part of the vote.
Brilliant, and thanks again.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Root subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.